Hello, hello, and welcome to Moe's Paisley Penny Arcade. I'm Moe Abdelbaki, and today is October 30th, the day before Halloween. Well, let me catch my breath. I just sat down here. Whoa, just made it. I was out on an errand and just got back. Just in time to sit down and begin the show. So I'm a little bit late, but better late than never. And no, there was no theme song. I was going to sing, but I didn't even have time to do that. So welcome. I hope you're doing well. I'm here. Better late than never. Otherwise, it would have been the late Moe Abdelbaki. I guess it was the late Moe Abdelbaki. One of these days, it will be the late Moe Abdelbaki. But it's not that yet. So, how are ya? A little out of breath. Not bad for an old man. I'm actually finding out that there's a lot I can do. Not bad for an old man. So, how have you been? What's going on? Not sure what's going on with this theme song. Maybe I'll put together a new theme song. You know, with all these problems I'm having. It's probably not an omen as much as it is that it's just time to put together a new theme song. It wouldn't be such a bad idea. Something a little snappier, you know? I mean, that's pretty snappy. But maybe something with nose flute. That's it. Nose flute in G minor. Or nose flute in D flat, or who knows. Or, you know, something for who knows. I'll think of something. So, anyway, October 30th, 2024. It's a Wednesday. Tomorrow is Halloween. November 1st is the new moon. How cool is that? Everything is coming right along, as they say. And you know who they are, the Council of Them. Have you had enough of the election? I have. By this time next week, the election will be more or less over. You know, the polls will be closed. And that will be the name of that particular tune. And I will be glad that that aspect of it is done. I'm guessing you may be glad it will be done, too. I'm guessing. I'm hoping you will be glad as well, because it's kind of getting to the point of saying, I'm tired of it. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of it. And last week's show, well, you know, I went on a limb. But it's not the first time I've been out on a limb. Have you been out on a limb? There's really nothing wrong with being out on a limb, even you think about it. Being out on a limb is one of those things. Whew. Catching my breath here. It was one of those situations where it should have been plenty of time, but you're waiting on someone else. Mo, I'll be right there. Hang on. I'll be right there. It's like, okay. And there's no use in getting upset because you know that there's just not a thing you can do. So, but I'm here. I made it. And it was just a tad bit late, but I got here. Oh, live radio. And, you know, had plenty of time. I mean, by all stretches of the imagination. And boy, my imagination can stretch. But by all stretches, I should have had all the time in the world. So I'd like to talk today about Halloween and Samhain. I don't have to drop my voice when I say Samhain. But, you know, it's kind of fun to do that. Samhain. I don't think I'll do that again. So Samhain and Halloween. You know, I used to be kind of not down on Halloween because my entire life I've loved it. I've loved Halloween. And then when I found out about Samhain, I loved Samhain. You know what else I like? Dios de los Muertos. So I want to talk about that too. They're wonderful, wonderful holidays. Yeah. That's something kind of interesting about it. I had kind of a jolt when my Mom died about this time of year, 25 years ago, and I was like, oh, God, it kind of, that ruined it for me. It's a silly thing to say. Gee, Ma, you know, but, and I came back home after her funeral, and it was this time of year, and I thought, God, it just kind of changes the way that is. But you realize, no, that's what it's about. It's about, the whole thing has always been about the concept of mortality and realizing, I think, the value of life, the importance of life, the beauty of life, the incredible vibrancy of life. We have this sense of fear in our world. And it's the importance of understanding the beauty of life. And that is kind of what Samhain was about as well. Samhain was a time for divination. It was a huge time of divination. You know, we look at the Celts and we look at the Druids and not always the same people. We look at Wales. Wales was not the animals, but the, you know, Wales in England. And we look at the Welsh culture as really being a very important aspect of the magical system of the English culture. Yeah, fascinating stuff. Really fascinating stuff. There used to be a free book on Amazon that you could download and read, and it was about the Welsh magical system, and it was truly quite fascinating. Did you know that the word wow that we have used to be part of a wow-up, and it was really, I think it was probably pronounced woo-whoop, you know, that was if you needed help, and you would yell wow-up, and so on and so forth. But so to talk about that today, about just the whole system of what Samhain was, and it was actually the new year. So tomorrow it'll be, well, actually, one will be on November the 7th. Now, why is that? Why is it on November the 7th and not on October the 31st? Well, let's start with that first of all. Samhain is a solar holiday, as all the cross-quarter days are. Well, I've talked about this before, but I think it bears worth repeating, or is worth bearing repeating, or the Bering Sea. So, a cross-quarter day, well, first of all, what are the quarter days? The quarter days are the solstices and the equinoxes, of which there are two each. So there are two solstices, and that is the winter solstice and the summer solstice. We know those. And there are two equinoxes, and that is the winter, or the, no, it isn't. It's the vernal equinox and, of course, the autumnal equinox. And so the equinoxes are where equinox being equal night, right? Equinox. And of course, that is not actually true for most of the world. On the equator, the equinox, equa day, so to speak, that happens. But for the rest of us, there is a point that is known as the equilux. And that is where the light and the day are similar. They are the same. And the equinox is figured out according to your longitude and, more importantly, your latitude. Latitude is very important. Latitude is quite important. I lived in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, at about 32 degrees latitude, very close to the latitude of Egyptos, Egypt. And so it was a fascinating place to live, and it was very different. The stars were at a different place on the horizon, which is to be expected. So it was a fascinating place to really learn as many constellations as I could in that area, and then move back to Colorado and say, oh, they're in a different place now. That's the fun thing about going from place to place. I've not been in the southern hemisphere. Because if I had been in the southern hemisphere, I would get to see things that I have not been able to see in the northern hemisphere, like the Southern Cross and Era, which means altar, and telescopium, which is a new constellation, of which there are 88 modern constellations. Ptolemy had 48 constellations. Fascinating, fascinating subjects when you get to know them. You really study these constellations and you look up in the sky and you say, my God, they're so much bigger than you expect them to be. And they are. They're magnificently large, the constellations. They're dynamic. They're incredible. And they're lovely. And when you see them, once you see them, you'll never forget them. Once you see them, you'll never forget them. I will recommend a book, by the way, if you are aiming to learn the constellations by, yes, his name, H, is it H? H. Ray? R-E-Y? I don't think it's A.A. Ray. No, it's H.H. Ray, the same fellow who wrote the Curious George books. And it's called, I believe, The Constellations and Getting to Know Them, something to that effect. Just look up Constellations by H.H. Ray. And if you can't, if that's wrong, look up Curious George. It's the same man. And he, what he did is he kind of reimagined the constellations and kind of looked at it his own way. Now, they're not 100% the same as the old constellations and so on and so forth, but it's a really handy way to look at constellations, and it makes about 1,000 times more sense because he just does a dot-to-dot sort of thing. Wonderful, wonderful book. Great way to look at the constellations. Great way to see them in the sky in a much more simplistic manner. I like it very, very much. I've had this book for decades. And the Cades have been really wonderful to look at this way. H.H. Ray, yes. How to See the Stars. The Stars, I think, is actually how he puts it. Anyway, it's a great book. Great book. And it makes looking at the sky easier and fun and just a whole good way to look at it. Thank you so much, H.A. Ray, wherever you are, for Curious George, which made me laugh like a little chimpanzee myself, although Curious George was not a chimpanzee. He was a monkey. He had a tail. I loved those books when I was a kid. Of course, now they're probably, you know, considered cruel. But truly, remarkable, remarkable thing, the sky and the stars and the heavens. And they make you ask questions. They make you ask questions about the world. I had a lot of friends who were astrophysicists in college. Isn't that funny? Here I am, an astrologer, and I had all these astrophysicist friends. Isn't that something? I didn't want to go that route because my math was terrible. I suppose I could have worked on it, but I enjoyed what I do. I enjoyed astrology and tarot and palmistry and the mysteries and the true mysteries. So back to Halloween and back to Samhain and all that. Anyway, back to the concept of a solar cross-quarter day. So we have the quarter days, the solstices and the equinoxes, and then we have what are known as cross-quarter days. Now, the thing is that the solstices and the equinoxes are 90 days apart. 90 days apart. So we have the winter solstice, and then 45 days after that, we have the vernal equinox. 45 days. So that's the winter solstice December 20th, 21st. And then 45 days after that, we have then December, February, March, 45 days or so, we have the March vernal equinox. And then 45 days after that, March, April, May, June, is that right? I don't know. We have the vernal equinox, right? And then we have the vernal equinox. Then we go to the next one, which is March, April, May, June. Then we have 40. I think it's 90. It's 90 days. Yes, that's. I'm wrong. It's 90 days later. 90, 90, 90, 90, 360. That's right, Mo. Keep your head right where it should be. Every 90 days, we have one of these four events that are very important. So that's the quarter days. Ah, of course, it's written right into the name, four quarters. So we have every 90 days, we have either an equinox or we have a solstice. Ta-da! Thank you, Mo, for that, and you're welcome, Mo. So every 90 days. But every 45 days, the ancients said, wait just a minute. There is something very important that happens as well. And they celebrated those very important days. So we have the winter solstice, and then 45 days after that, we had on the 2nd of February, they said there is 45 days after that, the sun reaches an important point. Now, that's February 2nd. We now celebrate this as Groundhog Day. Groundhog Day. And they celebrated that as what's something known as Imbolc, which means in the belly. And other cultures celebrated it as something else. But they said halfway between the vernal equinox and the winter solstice is something important too, because something very important happens. Animals are pregnant. They are gravid, and they begin to show that they are going to have lots of little babies, and sometimes women do too, so we have to acknowledge this. It's a very important time. And so they said, okay, so there's something important that happens there. And they also said, okay, so between the vernal equinox and the summer solstice, there is something that happens there too. So between March and between June, there is another 45-day thing that happens, and that's on May the 1st. May Day. May Day. I like saying it that way. So what happens around there May 1st? Well, we know it as May Day, right? And we erect poles in the ground, and we do maypole dances around that. It was a time of great fertility, and that was a time of great celebrations. And there, we still do that. We have baskets, and they had maypole dances, and we had May Queens, and all sorts of important things that to this day are still done. All over the country, all over the world. Isn't that something? And have been done for thousands of years. That's a cross-quarter day. So there was another one, and that was between the summer solstice and the autumnal equinox. And they said, okay, well, there's one in between there, too. And that was right around August the 7th, 5th to the 7th. That was 45 days. So they said, okay, and this one, well, this is about the harvest, the beginning of the harvest season. And we call that one Lammas, or we call that one Candlemas, or whatever you want to call it. But that was important as well. And then there was one between the autumnal equinox and between the winter solstice. And that one was the most important one of all. And that one was Samhain. I dropped my voice again. I always do that, don't I? And that one was incredibly important. Why? Because it marked the very end of the harvest season. The end of the harvest season and the beginning of winter. Well, why is that so important? Because it marked the end of the harvest season, which meant no more work and hunker on down because the cold season is coming. Now, that's important for a lot of reasons. For a lot of reasons indeed. Because it says you can't work the fields anymore. Because anything else that's in that field does not belong to you. It does not belong to you. It belongs to nature. It belongs to the gods. It belongs to travelers, weary, tired, and it may belong to the departed who need to eat. Right? Aha. Well, that brings us to a concept of the heaven's gates. That's a story that's worth an entire show on itself, which maybe I'll do someday. But there was a concept that what happened was on the solstices, the winter solstice and the summer solstice, that all the souls who would come to Earth or would leave the Earth, it was like a big elevator. Okay, everybody in, no crowding, everyone take your time, get in, move to the back, move to the back, move to the back. Hurry up, please. Oh, no, no, no. Take your time, but hurry up, please. No shoving, no shoving. Everyone will finally find a space. going up, you know, going down, that this would happen. And so from between Halloween to the winter solstice, all the souls who had departed the earth in physical form would get into the elevator, so to speak, and they would ascend. But between that time, they still had the form, so to speak, and would be hungry. And they would want to eat, and they would need to eat. So, on All Hallows' Eve, on Samhain, they would seek food. They were hungry. It was one of those things that happened. And they might head around to homes, and they might visit their old homes back again. And so this is part of that tradition as well. The hungry. The departed who were hungry. Now, this is not a new concept in the New World only. The ancient Egyptians believed in this concept. As a matter of fact, there is a wonderful old story. I believe it's from the Old Kingdom. It might be Middle, but I think it's Old Kingdom, of a man who had dutifully fed his father in the afterlife by contributing to the mortuary temple where his father was buried. And this would be done through giving money to the mortuary priests, you know. And his wife said, look, I think this is a scam, you know. You give them this money, they supposedly put the food in front of the false door in front of the tomb. And, you know, I'm not so sure. I think they eat the food themselves, or they put just a little bit of food, whatever the case may be. Because the ancient Egyptian religion, their cosmology was extremely intricate. It was a brilliant religion. It really was fascinating. And who's to say they were wrong? If so, then look at the damage we've done in the modern era. Oh my God, the things that have happened. And during the very time itself, because tombs were plundered days after burial for the gold and the riches that were in there. Even the poorest of tombs usually had some wealth within. But at any rate, so this story goes on to say that the man, feeling the pressure, eventually, and look who the villain is again. Oh my God, this has been going on forever and ever and ever. Will it ever cease? I certainly hope it will. I certainly hope it does. You know, why didn't he have the gumption and the guts to say, you know, this story, I don't like this story. Let it be on me. Let me be the greedy one. You know, let me be the one to say, I don't believe in this. But of course, that's not how some stories are told. So at any point, what he does is he stops making the donations to the mortuary temples, to the priests. And so they say, okay, well, you haven't paid. So, buddy, I'm afraid you're in for some trouble because we're not going to make these donations. And so the food's not going in front of your dad's. And we hate to do that because I know he's not going to be pleased, but that's the way it is. So one day, there is a pounding on his front door. Get this. So his wife goes to the door and opens it up, and there stands the unwrapped mummy of his father, his jaw hanging down. His jaw may have been gone, I don't recall now. And he says, let me in, let me in. I am hungry and I demand to be fed. And she screams, and he says, why are you screaming? It's your fault. I watched as you told him. My ka, which is the spirit, you know, the angry power spirit of this old man, I hungrily watch as you and your family eat, so I have come to eat with you. Now that you are no longer feeding me, you're going to feed me now, and I demand to be allowed in. So, you know, there's like trailing linens and so on. She says, he said, I can do whatever I want. I'm your father-in-law. Let me in. So she said, okay, father, come on in. And he sits down at the table. And of course, he takes food and he puts it in to nothing. You know, it just falls right through his rib cage. And everyone is screaming and crying. The children are crying. The son is humiliated. He says, I'm sorry, father. He says, sorry. I'm paraphrasing. Sorry. How dare you? you tell me you're sorry? So the father gets up and goes to every house in the village, pounds on the door, and says, "Look, look what my son did to me. You remember me. I was always good and pious, and I was a hard worker, and I was a member of this village, and blah, 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 blah. And look what my son did to me." And he embarrasses his son, you know, completely, completely, completely. And he stays for like 2 weeks, two whole weeks. And this all goes on. And then he finally says to his son, "Do I have your attention?" And his son says, "Yes, sir, you do." He says, "I'm going back to my tomb. And I expect you to take care of me forever." And he says, "Of course, Father, I will." So he goes back to the tomb, and the son makes sure that in aeternum, right? In aeternum, it is taken care of. So that was a cautionary note from the ancient Egyptians to say, this is what happens. And it is my belief that this story kind of gives us a hint as to why they tied up their dead so tightly. You know, it's not just a pretty thing. It's like saying, "Hey, man, we're going to tie these people up and bury them inside five coffins because we don't want them getting out." It's a terrifying thought, you know. Let's really tie them up tightly. And I could be wrong, but that makes perfect sense. It also represents, in my opinion, only probably a cocoon because of the metamorphosis that may occur. But I love that story because that is creepy. And that's the idea that comes forth in Halloween as well. Resurrection, the concept of resurrection. And that comes forth in the concept of the resurrection of the dead, right? You know, when you look at the final days, it's like, wow, all these things come together in certain religions, and it's wild stuff. There was a mummy movie on TV today. It was the old Christopher Lee one. He was a good mummy. He was tall. He's a tall guy. But the story of Imhotep. Imhotep, who, by the way, was the architect of Zoser's pyramid, and apparently Snefru's as well. But you know, the step pyramid at Saqqara, and far out stuff, just fun stuff to look back and guess at how things might have been and how they worked out. But we look at Halloween and we look at that concept of Samhain, you know, and we say, what is this all about? What is this about? What is this fear about? Well, I've had fear in my life. I lived in a haunted house. I've mentioned that about a zillion times. And I saw a ghost. I saw a ghost in the basement of this house. I don't think he meant me any harm. I'm not even sure he saw me per se, but I sure as heck saw him per se, and he scared me literally out of my wits. I was scared. I was 6 years old, maybe seven. I think, I don't know which for sure, it was right in that area, you know, and I was absolutely terrified, horrified, and because all I saw was a man in the basement standing next to what turned out to be a dentist chair. I thought it was a barber's chair at the time, and he's patting the chair like, get in the chair, little boy, and boom, it was an old creepy basement. I'll tell the whole story. I've told the story before, but I'll tell it again sometime because I'm zipping through today. I have so many thoughts about this, and it was real because I was able to prove it later on, because I was able to describe him minutely. My parents called the cops. And of course, after I described what I saw and explained it, they called the cops, said, "Don't come, do not come." You know, my parents sent me to the doctor, and the doctor didn't call me a liar. Luckily, although I think he was thinking that, but he said, your son has a very active imagination. But the truth was, I was able to describe the man absolutely clearly because I saw him. Although I saw him in a very strange way, which I can't, it's hard to describe now. I'll try again some other time. I don't know how to explain it, other than everything in him was moving. I don't know exactly how to put that. It was in color, but it was moving. Anyway, And later on, we found pictures and so on in the garage. It's a long story. And my dad said, "Is that the man you saw?" I said, "Yeah, I told you, that's the man. That's the man. That's the man I saw." And he said, "We don't talk about this to your mother." Long story. Long story. Not at the time. So the whole point is that there is something. Something somehow works. There is a persistence of life after death. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's consciousness. I don't know if it's simply like a movie. I'm not sure what it is. It turned out, by the way, that the man who lived in the house was, in fact, a dentist. That was it. He was a dentist. And he did not have a practice in that house. But we found in the garage his dentist chair and his drill and boxes and boxes and boxes and boxes and boxes and boxes of human teeth. So, I mean, it was just all proven out. What I saw, including the man with the high, you know, the dentist shirt. And it was just, so I knew there was something at a very early age, and so that affected me. It didn't make me completely crazy, but it pushed me a little bit toward that door, you know. And I was fascinated with everything Tarot and everything else. So Halloween to me was more than just dressing up like Dennis the Menace, which I did one year. It was much more than that. It was about the edge. It was about the doorway. It was about the precipice. It was about the veil. It was about this world, and about the fact that it was a very, very close thing between one world and the next. There were cold spots in that house, and I knew that those cold spots were just little doorways between one world and the next. And there was an entity in that house that despised me, and I knew she hated me, and she was an old woman. And so you know these things exist, and that's what Halloween is about. That's what Samhain was about, too. There's a little bit of fear there. That's why you put a turnabout on the front step and carve a face in it to say, "Don't come any further." You know, you see there's a face here. We're going to feed you something, but you don't need to come any further. You don't need to come too much further. We're people inside, and we don't necessarily want to feed you. We're friendly, but don't come too much further. That's why you feed, you know, you put the food out of outside the tomb, because you don't necessarily want your hungry, dead to come out and demand to be fed in your home. Because it terrifies everybody and embarrasses you, you know? That's why you wrap them so tightly. Because we know, at least in this particular iteration of the story, we know that there is something that can happen. And so that's in the back of our minds. The rest of the year, we don't give it that much thought, you know? But at this part of the story, after we work so hard on the harvest, and then all the plants, not all of them, mind you, because there are the coniferous plants, the evergreens, they live. And that's what the Yule is about. They live. And they live on in this magnificent fashion. This magnificent fashion that brings on the entire story of the Yule and the Yule tide. And that's the whole story of the Grail, really, in many, many ways, you know, the Holy Grail. And it really isn't about all that other stuff that a lot of people like to make it about. It's really about this miracle of these plants that never die. Never seem to die. It's remarkable stuff about holly, you know, holly, which is a plant that is in fact quite poisonous, and about the yew tree, which is another tree that is that remains green and yet in fact has these beautiful berries that are in fact quite poisonous and hallucinogenic. As a matter of fact, if you sleep under a yew tree, you're going to trip. And you may in fact get pretty sick, but its wood is incredibly pliable and makes wonderful bows for archers. But if you work with the wood unprotected and properly, you could die. I mean, th- this is a remarkable thing we're talking about. The holly tree, which, if it's attacked, will change from male to female, or female to male, rather, so that it becomes spiky. I mean, these are all things that our ancestors looked at and said, what's going on here? How about mistletoe? Mistletoe, this time of year, which is up in a tree, and it's a parasitic plant. It is neither of the sky nor the air. It lives off of another plant. So it's neither of the sky or the air. And here's this plant that lives in an apple tree very, very comfortably, loves apple trees, oak trees, loves oak trees. And it lives up in this, and some versions of the mistletoe plant with their white berries and their very strange shape, which looks incredibly anatomical, male-wise anatomical, with their white berries that will suddenly explode and shoot their viscous white liquid 60 feet, some of them, 60 feet. And the ancients said, this is bizarre. This is bizarre. This is something out of a, what is this? This is mythological. This is Odin. This is, what is this? And this is the story of Jason and the Argonauts, who go in search of the golden fleece. The golden fleece. Well, why golden? Because some mistletoes become golden and hang in the trees. After the tree, the deciduous tree, has lost all its leaves, what's left is this wonderful golden fleece hanging in the tree that is the mistletoe. And they treat this golden mistletoe like it's sacred, because it has medicinal properties and sacred properties. And they take a special golden sickle, and they will take a leaf or a two, and they will make a certain potion out of it. This is the magic of this time of year. This is the magic of sowing. I do that every time I sow, and I don't know why I do that. They take this magical, this elixir, and they form potions out of it. And the seers, they sit underneath these oak trees, and they profess the future. They see into the lives of people, and they tell the truth. These seers, it's unbelievable what they do. They see what they actually see, regardless of how traumatic it may be. This is this time of year. It is a powerful time of year. And so for us, it starts tomorrow. Boom. Halloween. A wonderful day. Wonderful day. We have to be careful for your kids. Kids don't understand. When I was a kid, I loved Halloween. It was very exciting. I dressed up first time as a mouse. Pirate. The first thing I ever dressed up as was a pirate. And I loved that. And I threatened to cut out my fellow classmates' gizzards. And I got the kindergarten teacher called my parents and said, well, I don't know what I watched, that sort of thing. And, I was going to cut out their gizzards. And then that night I was a mouse. It was decided I was being too bizarre. And then I was a mummy one year, and I wore strips of sheets. And by the time I got home, all the strips of sheets were gone. It was a beautiful night. It was warm. I was with a friend of mine whose father was a reverend, So here was this little mummy kid with another mummy kid, and we got home and all the sheets were gone. So it was just two kids running. And I'll always remember that. My father had come that day to first grade school and painted my face as a clown. But he had used these paints that had dried and it cracked. All the paint had cracked. And so I looked demented. And kids were scared of me because I looked like a scary clown. And it was kind of wonderful. I liked the way it looked. It looked really scary. And I hadn't anticipated that, It wasn't my idea to be a clown, but it turned out quite brilliantly. And throughout the years, you become different things. And you morph into one thing, into another, and those horrible masks where you could never see properly. The last year I was 15, as a matter of fact. Was I 15? A bunch of guys and I were too old, and we decided to do it anyway. And we scared the heck out of the people we went to, and because we were too old, and I just just bent over and was a hunchback. And I had, like, hair on my upper lip, you know, and they were terrified of us because we looked like hoodlums. And we may have been a little bit hoodlummy, but we didn't do anything bad. But they gave us, like, entire bags of candy just to get rid of us. And we felt ashamed of ourselves. Halloween, a rite of passage, you know. There was the cracker lady who gave everyone a single cracker, a single soda cracker. She was so, I don't know if she did it on purpose, it was cheap, and then one year she was gone because we knew she had died and we felt horrible. You know, this is, Halloween was about growing up. It was a rite of passage. It was about, you know, it was a day when you as a kid could go out by yourselves and do all, then there was the whole LSD thing and people putting needles and apples and razor blades in apples, and it never really happened. It was just supposedly, maybe it did, but I mean, it was just this really interesting time in our lives. We'd come home with this big pillowcase filled with candy and you'd try and make it last until Easter, you know? But the fear, you always went out and you could always feel that little edge. But nothing scared me because I grew up in a house with ghosts. So nothing scared me, you know? What is the real fear, though? Well, the real fear is that the plants all die. The real fear is that winter comes. And the real fear is that you won't make it. That's the whole concept. Now, the Dia de los Muertos is a beautiful season. It's a beautiful, you go out and you scrub the tomb of your loved ones, the graves of your loved ones, and you have a picnic, and you invite them back, and you set up altars, and you light up the graveyard, and you embrace it. It's very old. It's very old, and you make these wonderful dioramas. I know they have names. I can't remember them now. And it's ancient. It's ancient, and it's visceral, and it's beautiful. It's lovely. My daughter loves it. And she has this artwork all over her house, and I love her so much. I love my children so much. Oh, my God. I love them. I love them so much. But this part of her, I just want to embrace it all the time because it's fantastic. You know, it's this embracing of our past and our ancestors. And one day I'll be one of them. When she was young, I offered her my skull because I have a diastema, a big space between my front teeth. And she absolutely said, yes, I want it. I said, you're sure now? She said, yes. I said, it's yours. And later on, when she was an adult, I said, do you want my still want my skull? And she looked at me like I had, you know, eaten a bat. And she said, absolutely not. I said, you sure? You know, you said you want it. She said, Dad, I was like 8 years old. I said, okay, I won't give it to you then. But, you know, I thought it would be cool to give it to her and say, here I am. You can have me forever, and you can pass me down to your children and your children's children. But that, as it turns out, is not to be, because she is not as crazy as I am. So the point is that it's about eternity, and it's about the finality of life. And what do we do in the meantime? We live. It's no surprise that one of the most incredible things that people do on Halloween is dress up in slutty outfits. You know, the slutty nurse, the slutty doctor, the slutty this, the slutty that. It's because it's sexy. I should say sexy instead of slutty, you know. It's because there's something sexy about that whole idea. And that was true in ancient times, too. People would get together. They'd have these parties. There would be a lot of divination. There would be this whole thing about apples. Apples were considered to hold an immense amount of power. Why? Because there are a lot of apples this time of year, right? So they would do apple divinations with cutting the you know, if you could cut the peel off in one whole piece, right? You know, and then they would tell you you know, who you were going to marry or who liked you or something like that. That was really a lot of fun, and there's all sorts of things that you would do with apples and nuts. Nuts were the other one. You would put nuts in the fire. Hazelnuts were big because hazelnuts are a huge symbol of wisdom. Walnuts and so on and so forth. Pardon me. And I mean, it was all about the future because it's New Year's, at least in the old world. Well, in the new world, so to speak. But it's a time for looking forward, and the veil is split. You know, they had this belief that they would have a huge bonfire. And there was this belief that just beyond the bonfire, that's where the dead watched us from. I shouldn't say the dead, the departed, because they didn't think of them as dead. They thought of them as just ephemeral on the other side. And so they would just watch, knowing that they were watching us. There was a kind of a joy there, a real sense of happiness, you know? I just love this time. Now, for us, it will start tomorrow on Halloween, and it will go until the 7th, which is actual solar Samhain. I've got to stop doing that. Samhain. And so what do you do? How do you celebrate this? It's a week to me or so of just acknowledgement of the true joys that we have, of the true sense of wonder in this world, just of being... This is an incredible time in our lives where we should be alert and aware of what's going on around us and of our lives and the joys of our lives, you know? This is a time to be aware of how valuable our lives are. You should eat apples. You should eat squash. Winter squash, fall squash, doesn't matter. Those things of the earth... You should take benefit of good bread. I like good bread. I like bread way too much. My doctor said, you know, it's not this and that and whatever and then and then and that that's going to make you fat, Mo. It's bread. It's carbohydrates. And I said, huh, yeah, I know. I love bread. I love good bread. You know, it's good bread. That gets to me. The stuff that you can just really, when you tear it apart, it talks to you. It says, oh, eat me, Mo. This is good bread. This is going to fulfill you. This is going to give you what you need. This is going to take care of you. You're going to love this with cheese, and you're going to love this with an apple. You know, not just any old apple, but a good crisp apple. Maybe some new type, maybe some old type, maybe some old world type. You know, and an acorn squash, you know. Oh, man. How's that sound to you? To me, that sounds wonderful. Sounds wonderful. Maybe some spinach. You know, who knows? Who knows? A fresh tomato? Ah, cheese. I love cheese. Give me some Asiago. You know? All of this. You just sit down. I mean, God, olives? Oh, my God. I do love to eat. So, this is about... That's what life is to some extent. It's about saying, here we are. And that's what that other side misses, is that. So hence trick-or-treating, feeding. It's a strange sort of paradigm, isn't it? But that's how it is. That's how it is. And it's that crossing that place between warmer weather and colder weather. And remember... Tomorrow night, well, not tomorrow night, it'll be November 7th, at sunset, winter begins. And I like to always have a little personal ceremony at sunset. Now, what I do is I set a watch to beep or tap me on the shoulder or whatever, and just to say, Here it is. This is the moment. Because it changes everywhere in the world. It's sunset wherever you are. Winter has started. Autumn is done. It's finished. And the winter has begun. And thus it will be until the spring begins, which will be on Imbolc. Sunset on Imbolc. And so from this point forward, buckle up, you know, button up. And I just love that, because this is the earth we're on. The earth is alive. The earth is moving, always. Moving 1,000 miles an hour, right? 1,000 miles an hour, spinning on its axis, hurtling through space at, you know, 33 kilometers per second, always, around the sun. Oh. And we're lucky enough to be alive on it right now. For how long? That's a good guess. I'm 70. A friend of mine just turned 71 in September, and 71. And we went out to lunch yesterday. I finally got to take him out to lunch for his birthday. And I looked at him and I thought, man. So this time of year isn't about what scares us as long as we embrace it all, you see. It's about what exhilarates us. It's about what turns us on in life. It's saying, yes, I get it. I get it. I get it 100%. I get it to the very marrow of my bones. And I know it's real. And that's what it's really about. Acknowledgement. It happened to my father. It happened to my mother. It happened to all my grandparents. It's happened to all my uncles on my mother's side. It's happened to most of my aunts. It's happened to many of my uncles on my dad's side. It's happened to all my great uncles and all my great aunts. And it's going to happen to me. And when I go, it will leave my children probably devastated. But I will leave behind grandchildren who love me, and someday great-grandchildren who won't know me, but they'll hear about me, maybe, and they'll be able to look me up on this internet thing, and they'll be able to hear my voice, and they'll say, that old man was nuts. Right? That's what this is about, embracing life. And acknowledging that this is not a forever endeavor, but saying, but we appreciate those who are here and who have been here, and they were loved and they are still loved. That's what this is all about, you see. It's not about fear. It's about love and joy and having fun. You know, go ahead, get a scare. That's fine. Because love is so valuable that we need a little bit of a touch of adrenaline when we think about not being here anymore. Right? I, for one, know there is some. I'm not sure what there is. I don't know exactly if I believe there is an afterlife. I mean, I know about ghosts, but I don't know what that is. Because I don't really care about an afterlife. I care about this life. This, to me, is the most important thing there is. Being in my home, playing with my beautiful dog, who gets spayed tomorrow. That's the truth. And of course, I'm a little bundled up about that. You know, got a great vet, great staff. Trust him completely, he and his staff. But you still go, okay, here we go. Gotta be done. But that's the way that is. so here we are, on this planet together. Halloween tomorrow, Dia de los Muertos, the new moon. Make sure you make your wishes for the month. It's what I do. I go outside and I look at that darkness in the sky and I say, please keep the people I love safe. Please keep everybody safe. Let's have a nice transition of power, should we? Let's make sure that sanity reigns and sanity rules. We could use that. Hasn't been awfully sane lately, has it? Has not been so sane. All right. Well, my time on today's show is almost up. I hope you've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed it. Have a happy, happy Halloween. Have some fun with Dia de los Muertos. At least get on YouTube, look at some of the celebrations. Watch Coco. It's a beautiful movie. I really like that movie. My grandkids watch it over and over and over and over again, which I love. And on Samhain itself, acknowledge it. It acknowledges us every year. Until next week, I wish you all peace and love. Talk to you later. Bye.
Until next we meet, I'll be waiting for you right here in the Paisley Penny Arcade. 1, 2, 3, 4.